welcome to KTR's Locker Room for this week. Cooper Welch here, along with quite a big group this week. We've got Kevin Jeffries, Mark
Haslam. Is that a comment about my weight?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
We just got a bigger group in studio than normal. Kevin Jeffries, Mark Haslam, and Ryan Billups here with me. This is going to be Ryan Billups' second to last show with us.
Sad day.
Officially, anyway.
Sad day.
So,
Cue the applause.
Yeah.
Hey there.
No, but it's been good to have him on the show. One of the founding members. Real fun. And we wish him the best of luck as he goes and gets married and gets a real job.
I appreciate that.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Not in radio or anything. Anyway, let's get to work, guys. First, we've got a controversial question like we do every week. We've got this week, Michael Strahan calling out the Cowboys, which is fun to do as a Giants person. I'm sure it is. First, he said that the Cowboys, who are predicted to win the NFC East this year, have been predicted to do that the last 10 years, and they don't deserve it. So that got a lot of Cowboys fans mad. And then he said some other stuff, and then it led to Strahan saying, if I'd played for the Cowboys, we would have won the Super Bowl. Now, we'll get back to that in just a second. I also want to say what else we're covering in the show. We're going to talk the Rangers, who are 5-5 in their last 10 games, losing the last three straight. Then we're going to cover the NHL playoffs, because Mark is here to be the NHL expert. And then in the second segment of the show, we're going to talk about the NBA playoffs. My Spurs swept the Grizzlies, even though I didn't predict them to do that.
And, see, I told you, never bet against your own team, man.
It's true.
I said, don't do it.
And we've got Miami and Indiana tied at 2-2, which is looking like a really good series. The finals start June 6th, so we're all looking forward to that, I'm sure. All right, guys, let's get to that controversial question. First, is Strahan right? Could the Cowboys have won the Super Bowl if Strahan had played for them instead of the Giants?
Okay, I did some research on this because I get worked up. First of all, I'm going to say we a lot when I refer to the Dallas Cowboys.
Fair enough. Of course.
One, I don't do a regular sports show or sports journalism, so there's no journalist integrity I have to maintain in that area. And number two, without the fans, there would be no sports. So definitely is a we. I'm part of the team. And,
right.
You know, if I don't wear the right colors on game day, we lose and things like that. You know,
turn the bottle the right way.
Yes. Traditional. But first of all, Michael Strahan was drafted in 1993. The Cowboys won two Super Bowls in that time span. Okay. They didn't need Michael Strahan to win a Super Bowl. They won two in that span. 93 and in 95, they came back. And then Michael Strahan, they had to go out and get a free agent quarterback, not a defensive end. Even when Michael Strahan started getting on his, being Michael Strahan, record-setting Hall of Fame type defensive end, they needed to go get Kerry Collins after he had already been into the playoffs several times with the Panthers. They got him before they got there in 2000 and then lost, I might say. They didn't win that Super Bowl with Michael Strahan. And the next year, let's see. Let me get my notes. The next year, after they went to the Super Bowl, they go 7-9, miss the playoffs. And then after that, they're in the playoffs against San Francisco, and they have a 38-14 lead, which they managed to throw away in the fourth quarter against San Francisco in the playoffs the following year. And that would be what would you call that, a defensive meltdown, Mr. Strahan? Isn't that how would you kind of define that?
Yeah,
then they go 4-12, fire the head coach, get a new one, and Eli Manning comes on board, the guy that they needed. And once he matured, they were able to go in and do this miraculous defeat of the quote unquote greatest team to ever play, undefeated New England Patriots. And but that year, they beat the Cowboys. This is where Michael Strahan may have some legitimate point. Is that year they beat the Cowboys, went on to win the Super Bowl, and if in that game the Cowboys had a veteran Michael Strahan alongside of DeMarcus Ware instead of the Giants having a veteran Michael Strahan, then maybe we would have beat them in that game and gone on to win the Super Bowl.
And that's one of the Cowboys' best seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, they won 13 games. They went 13-3 that year. I mean, they were by far the favorites,
almost beat the Patriots that year.
Yeah, and and it was a close game, 21-17. That's a game where one player really could make a difference.
And their front four I think their front four was the one, Eli Manning and the front four of the defense were the reasons that they went on to win the Super Bowl that year. So absolutely. He can take some pride in that, but then he retired. But, yeah, you would have won a Super Bowl with me. We did win Super Bowls without you, mister. And let me tell you one thing. That year when you were going in there looking for your quarterback and you finally got one in Kerry Collins, and then you didn't. And then you didn't have one, and you were horrible, and then your young quarterback had to get better. Those were the years where the Cowboys were losing games. We had a good defense. Mm-hmm. Losing games, the 5-11 years, losing games like 12-9.
Those are the Quincy Carter years.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and let me tell you, talk about would Michael Strahan have made a difference? No. Maybe somebody like Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers could make in, and even then it's not guaranteed. But right. let's look there. When we had the great defense, didn't need a Michael Strahan. We needed a quarterback.
So desperately needed a quarterback.
Quincy Carter, Anthony Wright, Ryan Leaf, of all things. Clint Sterner, Chad Hutchinson, Vinny Testaverde, the old man. He was, I think, I'm not quite sure he qualified for Social Security.
And he was
one
of the better ones.
Yes. Yeah. Drew Henson, Drew Bledsoe, and then finally Tony Romo. And in one game, you went, oh, we finally actually have a quarterback now. Yay.
Well, you try enough of them out, eventually you're going to strike gold, right?
Yeah. But no. Michael Strahan, you would have won a Super Bowl? We did. We won two Super Bowls while you were during your career, and you only won a Super Bowl because you finally got a quarterback, and that was the stretch of time that you're looking at where it was bad. Maybe we would have beat the Giants if we had Strahan instead of the Giants having him when we faced them when they went on to win the Super Bowl in 2008. Maybe. Right. Some legitimacy. But not with the vile, vindictive crap that he's spewing. No. I begrudgingly liked Michael Strahan once he stopped playing because I like it. I think he's a good broadcaster. He's a good personality. But this I hadn't even heard about this.
Yeah, that's the thing. That rivalry is always going to be there. If you're a Giant, you're always going to hate the Cowboys. Yeah, you're a Cowboy, you're always going to hate the Giants. It even is. After retirement.
Eli Manning with the first win in the new stadium, too.
No, I agree with Kevin, though. I think, I mean, first off, we did win two Super Bowls, so that needs to be noted and sent to Michael Strahan so he can remember that. I think the only year that maybe Strahan would have made a difference was that 2007 year. We went 13-3. We had a pretty great team.
Right.
But a lot of that was offensively we were great. I think having that defensive pressure off the line, put him opposite of D-Ware, that could have been a pretty pretty awesome duo there, and it possibly could have been the 21-17, that's a close game, could have been the difference.
Yeah, might have been the difference. But the other part of your question, is there a current NFL player that the Cowboys could get to guarantee a Super Bowl? I don't think there's a guarantee, but it certainly wouldn't be a defensive end, even if we didn't have DeMarcus Ware. It wouldn't be one player. If I said it was going to be one player that could guarantee it, I would have to choose four offensive linemen. You know, otherwise, the closest you get is a quarterback, and Peyton Manning, a Tom Brady, a Drew Brees, an Aaron Rodgers. But even then, you know.
Not with that offensive line. Those guys guys aren't as mobile as Tony.
Plus, you know, it's a guaranteed fact that nobody like Tom Brady or Peyton Manning would, in the fourth quarter of a playoff game, throw an interception and guarantee your loss. Oh, wait, no, they both did it last year in the playoffs, okay?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, both of those guys would – everybody always says, we should have got Manning. Could you imagine Manning – I don't know if you've ever seen Peyton Manning run.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a reason he went to Denver, and it's because they have a great offensive line. He has all day back there. If you see him on behind our offensive line with, let's say, maybe 2 seconds to throw the ball, he's getting sacked 20 times a game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And his surgically repaired neck couldn't.
Oh, he won't even make it through the season.
It would have been dangerous. He would have been an idiot to come
here. And so with the structure of our team, I don't think getting a quarterback's really going to – I don't think there's one quarterback out there that would win it for us. That's the problem with our team is I don't think we're one person away. Okay. I think maybe you bring in an all-star caliber, tackle to go on the opposite side of Tyron Smith, and maybe we have a shot, you know, but
yeah.
I think we're a couple guys away, to be honest with you.
And I think those couple of guys, like you're saying, are on the offensive line. I think Romo has enough juice left to get to win a Super Bowl. He has the ability. He's one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. The big knock on him is that he crumbles in the fourth quarter, and statistically, that doesn't even necessarily that doesn't bear out. But
no, it.
I think that you can't really make that determination when it's so weak in front of him. It's very hard to make that determination. So the last thing I want to do is get rid of a guy who is pretty good and get a guy who may or may not be pretty good and let them be horrible behind a sucky offensive line.
Right.
You know?
To have one of the worst offensive lines, he's a pretty darn good quarterback.
I know. You get the fundamentals first, and I think that's I'm agreeing with you about the offensive line. If there's anything the Cowboys need, it's some of those fundamental pieces, offensive, defensive line. The rest of it, we got some pretty good personnel in place.
Yeah, and if we had an offensive line, then I'd say bring in a D-tackle or D-end, like one of those guys at that point. But you got to look at offensive line first.
Well, how about this? What if I said not a player, but maybe a general manager? Do you think that could be the thing that saved the Cowboys and send them to the Super Bowl?
Well, if we're gonna be traveling to the realm of what unicorns, ifs, rainbows, and lollipops over there, then yeah, I don't know who, but yeah,
and even if we brought in a new general manager this year, we're not gonna win the Super Bowl. It's a rebuilding process. It'd probably take years and years to get our program to the right place. I mean, what Jerry Jones has done to this program, it's a lot of years of work to rebuild it.
Yeah, and right now you have Romo doesn't have that long left on his career, probably won't play out his contract, and probably certainly won't play it out with the Cowboys. So you got a few years left where you have a quarterback who's a known quantity, and maybe he has his faults, but he's also proven that he can do some good things. Mm-hmm. But Jason Witten's getting older. You have some other guys on the team where, you're moving. We are starting to get some youth in some places, but I think we got maybe 2-3 years left with the Witten Romo combo and probably Jason Garrett, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll
so,
see.
I mean, you're kind of there, and at this point, you need to prop up that with those.
And on Jason Garrett's note, I really do. I think this is a make or break season for him. I think if they don't make a legitimate push into the playoffs, he's gone.
And it's a contract season too, so
yeah.
And there's no way.
We'll see.
Jerry Jones is too much of a pleaser to bring back Jason Garrett if he fails, because every single person's going to want him out.
Right.
I already do.
Good contribution, Mark.
Thank you.
Well, let's move on to the next part of the program so Mark can weigh in a little bit more.
Sure.
Let's talk.
I'll try to get less worked up over here. Sorry. Okay. I love my Cowboys.
Let's talk the Rangers. As I said at the start of the program, they're 5-5 in their last 10 games, including losing 3 straight to the Mariners in that ridiculous 13th inning game. And then a doubleheader against Arizona. They lost both of those. So what's causing this recent losing streak?
I wouldn't attribute it to any one particular thing. The thing about a major league season is that you're going to lose 50 no matter what you do. You're going to win 50 no matter what you do. And it's what you do with the other 62 some odd games that counts. And there's just sometimes when you're just going to go out there and lose a baseball game. Even a team like the Seattle Mariners is still a decent team. Mm-hmm. Even the worst team in Major League Baseball.
Astros. Yeah.
I mean,
any given day, a bad team can go out and just hit lights out.
Certainly. So I'm not really panicked at all about this. It's just one of those things. Long season, you're just going to have these little dead spots here and there, and you just hope they don't. You hope they don't happen against division rivals. So if it was against Oakland or Anaheim, then I'd be more upset about it. But Seattle, it doesn't matter really.
Okay. What about the injuries that are stacking up? We've got a pretty big DL list right now. We've got Kinsler out until June 2nd with a rib injury. And when he comes up, they're going to send Jerickson Profar back to the minors. That was just reported today.
And he's been a surprise player for us. Jerickson Profar really didn't do a lot in the majors last year. He's our number one prospect.
I do not think that's a surprise. I wanted them to ax Kinsler in the offseason
and put
Profar on full time.
He's done great so far.
Kinsler's had a good
he's
season.
Hitting 304. Jerickson Profar's hitting 304. He's got a home run. I mean, he's really playing good baseball. Has a couple of defensive mishaps, but for a young player, he's really filled in really nicely for Kinsler, who's really having a rebounding season as well.
Keep Profar in there. I'm not worried about Kinsler being out. One of the things I like about the disabled list is it's not all of our pitchers there like it was last year. So we have some actual good news concerning pitchers. Some bad news.
Some bad news. Now, we've got Martin Perez just came back, and he pitched in one of the doubleheader games. Pitched 5 1/3 innings on Monday in the first game. Gave up 4 runs, and then he was, after that, sent back to Round Rock. Nick Tepish and Michael are day-to-day. Harris is on the 60-day DL, which would bring him back in late July.
That one hurts.
Yeah, that one hurts. But as we saw at the start of the season, he wasn't pitching very well anyway. So
hopefully Colby Lewis will come back and replace that void there.
That's the next one. Colby Lewis threw 4 innings for Triple A Round Rock on Saturday and reported that he felt pretty good, felt much better than his last start. So I'd say he's maybe 3-4 weeks away at most.
And that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I forgot we had Colby.
He's made a really quick recovery. It seems
And we missed him last year. We would have won one more game with Colby Lewis.
Absolutely.
We've been in the playoffs.
I mean, you look at our fifth starting spot last season, and we lost on just about every game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at who we had in the fifth.
I know. He was 0-6 at one point in the season. Or 1-6. I mean,
yeah, it's good to have him out.
Yeah.
At least. And then Ogando is on the 15-day DL. But he did complete a bullpen session on Monday without any problems, so he should be back pretty soon, too.
And he's been a great surprise this year. He has pitched phenomenal in that spot, and we needed him to.
Right. So, basically, we've just had some rookie pitchers come in, like Tepish, Justin Grimm, Josh Lindblom. All of them have come in and been surprisingly, I'd say, a little bit above what we thought.
Definitely above expectations,
Not excellent, but very good for rookies.
No, they filled the void. They've won some games for us. They're a lot better than people could have expected. And, you know, like you said, the injuries have kind of come on the offensive end as far as losing Kinsler and some other guys. But I think our team is filled in very nicely. Profar came up, did a great job. Jeff Baker has been one of the biggest surprises this season. He's hitting .373. Yeah. 28 games played, 5 home runs. I mean, dude is just lighting it up right now. And so we've had a lot of good surprises as well.
I'm actually concerned about Ogando. I know that his injury that he has right now is not a big deal, and he's going to be back. And he's obviously been pitching very well this season. But guys with that body type, I'm just really concerned about his role as a starter. Speaking of forgotten players, remember we've got Feliz still on the Rangers. He's going to be coming back. And I really think that Feliz should be a reliever. If I'm Ron Washington, it's not like I'm going to take Ogando out of the rotation because he's just too good. I can't justify putting him in the pen. But at the same time, for every Pedro Martinez, skinny dude like that who from some miracle of nature is able to withstand the workload of being a starter, you got a bunch of other guys that you probably never heard of because they flamed out. Yeah. So, and if Ron Washington, and I'm a huge Wash fan, but he's absolutely brutal with pitching staff, has no idea how to handle pitchers, and I worry about the combination of Ogando and Washington, particularly since Ogando kind of has that Caribbean machismo thing where he likes to tough it out, and he doesn't like to say that he's injured. That's what happened this last time, was he was actually hurting, and then we didn't find out about it till after the fact. Maybe he learned his lesson this time. It's just like, dude, if you're making this much money, you need if you've got something that's going on, your coach needs to know and let him make that call and not you.
Right.
So I'm concerned about that, but keeping the fingers crossed. And even though I just got through saying I think Feliz is probably best used in the pen, if they put him in the rotation when he comes back later this season, I really can't object to that just because it's like he's too good and they need somebody in the rotation.
Yeah.
Like I can't wait for him to get back. I'm a fan.
Yeah. Well, you talked about Wash not using pitchers very well, not knowing how to really ride them. There's been a lot of controversy about the last now 3 starts that Yu Darvish has had where he's pitched well over 130 pitches in each one. What do you guys think about that?
I think I've seen some of the instances where he just didn't need to. I understand if you need to, you ride your starting pitcher if they're having a good game, as long as you need to for a big win. But sometimes should pull them a little early, and then, you know, some of those situations, maybe, maybe not. That's something, unfortunately, we'll have to wait to see if anything bad happens to mm-hmm. find out what the truth is there. Because, you know, if nothing happens, then you can still debate it. If something bad happens, then you have an answer. So, kind of debatable there. I think there are some issues where you want to rest them a little bit. I know there's kind of this mentality, and this is what I was saying. I'd heard it too. People going, well, when he was in Japan, he'd throw 180 pitches or whatever. And then I found out, yeah, but they played once a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he had plenty of time to rest, you know. I mean, there was more time between when he pitched to throw that many, but I think you, you don't want to be too gingerly.
It definitely goes to show his endurance. So, I mean,
yeah.
For a guy to do that, it's pretty incredible. And a lot of times he's in situations where he doesn't want to leave the game because he wants to get the win, or he wants to, you know, maybe he's having a great game. He wants to finish the game, try to complete all nine innings. So just different situations like that. I would like to see his numbers go down a little bit, though, get it to maybe kind of that 100 area.
Yeah, I think safety is 100, around 100 pitches.
Or maybe you could you ride him a little hard at the beginning of the season, then you go easy, so you build up his, you know, ability, and then when mm-hmm. the playoffs roll around, he just pitches every game.
Yeah, there we go.
Every game. Yeah. We never lose because he comes
every
in.
Game. All nine innings, every game.
Yeah.
Love it.
One of the things, I'm pretty much with Kevin here as far as I think it's very situational. I don't think you want to be too formulaic and be like, oh, 100 pitches, got to yank him.
Like they did with Steven Strasburg.
Right. Week. But the thing is that if it's a situation where he doesn't need to be in, if they've got a large lead or something like that, then go on ahead and pull him out. You know, something that I don't recall, and, you know, perhaps somebody listening can send us an email and correct me, but something that I don't recall any Ranger manager ever having done is you're talking about the end of the season is using the spot starters more in July and August and September and letting these guys get a break, because it just seems like pitching in Arlington in that heat.
Oh yeah.
It takes the life out of guys. And mm-hmm. how many times have we seen the Rangers tank in August or September? And I don't want to attribute it all to the weather, but when the actual players are telling you that that's a factor, mm-hmm. then you have to listen. So I wish that maybe with some of these guys coming back from injuries that we can take some of these guys who've shown that they can be trusted mm-hmm. to not just completely stink it up out there if given a start, and put them out there as a spot starter and bump everybody up a day or so in the rotation. That might help out. Of course, I don't believe Wash is going to do that. So,
but to that point, it is good that we have had some injuries early on in the season, because now we have these rookies that we know we can trust.
Yep.
Right.
We've kind of learned
good
our
point. Yeah.
We have these guys that that we've tested out, and now we know that they can perform on the big level and come in and save a spot for some of these
guys. Maybe that'll happen a time or two, hopefully.
Yeah, let's hope so. All right, well, let's very quickly, because we don't have much time left in the segment, let's talk NHL playoffs. I know you got a lot to say about that. So first, just tell us what's going on. What's happening in the NHL playoffs?
What's going on, and I'll be real brief because I know that Northeast Texas isn't the hugest hockey hotbed in the U.S., but over in the Eastern Conference, we've got a wonderful Eastern Conference final shaping up between the Boston Bruins and Pittsburgh Penguins. Should be a real good series. Mm-hmm. The Bruins have looked very good, and the Penguins have performed very well also. So,
is there any sort of a classic rivalry there?
Not really. They've always been in different divisions.
Okay.
So they've never been division rivals. And so really there isn't any kind of about the only rivalry that you would say that there exists between the teams is just the fact that they're both usually pretty good and they're always kind of at the top of their conference. But even with all of the various realignments and stuff that the NHL's done, Boston and Pittsburgh have always been in different divisions. So there's not a lot of bad blood between the teams. It's just a lot of good hockey.
Okay.
Over in the West, we know one of the two conference finalists, which is last year's Stanley Cup champions, the LA Kings.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good news for the NHL. I'd like to see teams in the major markets performing well.
And they just took out San Jose, right?
Which is a tradition, a rite of spring, along with St. Patrick's Day parades.
So I say, for it. I'm for taking out the Sharks.
The San Jose Sharks, they always seem to be one of the best teams in the NHL in the regular season, and they always tank, in the playoffs. So, it's just something that you come to expect from the Sharks, and they've done it again, and they didn't disappoint their legions of haters across North America. So that's good news. And about all I would want to add for our little NHL segment is that if you're listening, if you catch this podcast on Wednesday, and you have an opportunity to catch Game 7 of Chicago-Detroit tonight, do so. If you watch that game and you're not into it, then you can safely say, look, I've given hockey a try, and it's not my deal.
Right.
Because tonight is going to be a fantastic game. I would be stunned if it weren't very close. Game 7 at Chicago. The backstory for this is that the Blackhawks finished the season with the best record in the NHL. The Red Wings, even though they're usually one of the top teams, they had kind of one of their off seasons. They just barely squeaked into the playoffs. And then they surprised Chicago by getting up to a 3-1 lead in the best of seven series,
right,
putting the Blackhawks in a situation where they had to win three consecutive games. Well, over the weekend, Chicago won Game 5 in Chicago. A fantastic game Monday night at Detroit, where the Blackhawks were down and came back in the third period to win 4-3, mm-hmm, and forcing Game 7 in Chicago tonight. Lots of Michiganders always make the trip down to Chicago for the game, so it's going to be raucous. And if just tune in for the first few minutes, they have a fantastic tradition in Chicago that actually started during, unfortunately, it was not a very happy time in our nation's history. It was started during the 1991 Gulf War. And as you recall, it was the All-Star Game,
okay,
in Chicago. It was January. And as you recall, that conflict started in late January of 1991. Well, you might not recall because you're pretty young.
Yeah.
But that conflict began in late January of 91. And feelings were very high, mm-hmm, obviously, in this country, because we didn't know going into that the war was going to be as short as it's going to be. Everybody was really afraid of a long, drawn-out conflict in the Middle East. And so emotions were very high. And at that All-Star game, during the national anthem, the feeling in that building was so strong, it was back at the old Chicago Stadium, that they didn't wait until the end of the anthem to cheer. They started applauding during the anthem. And that was the loudest building in the NHL back at the time. And it was a really stunning moment. Anybody who was on the ice for that says that just the volume and the emotion is just one of the things that stands out to them as one of the biggest memories in their career.
Mm-hmm.
And that started this tradition that they have in Chicago of cheering the national anthem. So just tune in the beginning of the game and just watch everybody in that stadium go nuts, mm-hmm, as they cheer the anthem. It's going to be loud, crazy, and then what happens on the ice should be even better. So if you're on the fence about hockey, tune in tonight. If you don't like it, forget about it. You're not a hockey person.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right. Well, let's take a break, and we'll come back for the second segment of the show, which will be all about the NBA playoffs. This is KETR's Locker Room.
I'm Gary Wallace. I invite you to tune in every Saturday night at 7 o'clock for The Scorpion's Honey. It is the perfect bridge between Prairie Home Companion and Notably Texan. The tales weaved by Otrova Gomez are humorous, thought-provoking, and food for philosophical discussion. Tune in and enjoy The Scorpion's Honey on your station, 88.9 KETR.
From the moment you wake up.
Good morning. More than a third of the judgeships on a major U.S. circuit court are vacant.
Through your drive home.
Make no mistake, we will get to the bottom of this.
Listen all day, every day. NPR News, always on.
All Welcome back to KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch, Kevin Jeffries, and Ryan Billups still here with you. Mark Hazlett had to go and do the news, so we let him go off and do
that. It never stops.
Yeah. Let him go do his job instead of keeping him here talking about sports. So what do we got left, guys? It looks like just the NBA and the playoffs that are happening right now. So first, major apology to my Spurs and the Spurs fan base.
You owe them a big apology. You jumped ship.
I did. I jumped ship, and now I'm still a diehard Spurs fan, but I seriously thought the Memphis Grizzlies had it in six. I did.
I don't even like the Spurs, and yeah. I picked them.
I don't know. I picked the Grizzlies. I did pick the Grizzlies. Yeah. I thought that hot hand, and I was surprised that one of the most impressive things about this was that San Antonio, I was afraid that being a little older, that they were going to wear down. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. The two overtime games, they came back and won. And that's the experience, the mental fortitude. And, yes. and then Memphis just couldn't shoot. Just could not make a
and
basket.
How great is this, now that they've swept, how great is this break going to be for those old legs?
That's true.
Yeah, I was asking Cooper the other day, I go, okay, so do you want the Heat series, the Heat Pacers, do you want that to go to seven, or do you want it to end quickly, or are you afraid of the rust versus rest argument?
Here? Yeah, I'd want rest if I was a Spurs fan, yeah, I think. Yeah,
that's
those
true.
Guys are some old team there.
Well, there's my apology. Sorry, Spurs fans, and the Spurs, of course. And if I had a chance, of course, I'd actually make an apology to them, but I don't think I'll ever make it down to San Antonio this year. Anyway, let's move on. First, about this series, what was the thing that most impressed both of you?
Oh, I kind of like Kevin was saying, just the fact that their age really didn't get the best of them, that they came out, they played sharp basketball, and honestly, they out-hustled a younger, more athletic team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was good, and they kept the mental attitude about it very important, staying in the game, getting behind, fighting your way back, and then staying alive in the overtime and just making the shots count when it matters. That's what you expect of the Spurs. And if they hadn't done it, we would have all attributed it to a matter of, you know, old knees, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically, it absolutely wouldn't have been an attitude thing.
Right. I think for me, the most impressive thing was Tony Parker coming in and just shooting the lights out. He normally is a pretty good player. I mean, obviously he has a finals MVP,
right.
Three championship rings. But the thing that impressed me most was how dynamic his game was. Three games he scored, all four games actually, he scored over 20 points. And three of those games he scored well over a third of the Spurs' total in the first three quarters. And then the other game, I think it was game three, he had somewhere near 18 assists, which is ridiculous.
And this really has been the playoffs of who is the best point guard. You've seen so many different point guards trying to prove that they're the best this playoffs, and it's really been incredible to watch all these guys.
Definitely. But shooting-wise, I think Tony Parker is really astounding me because the three ball is not his shot. But he's made more threes in the Memphis series than I think I've ever seen him make consistently across even a regular season of any time.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool to see him not just make those shots, but even take them, because he usually does. He just passes it. If he's open on the three, he'll just pass it. And that's the thing that Coach Popovich lives on, is saying, if you are open, no matter where you're standing, if you're completely wide open, you shoot.
That's the percentages. Yeah, yeah, I mean, all of them can shoot, you know. Yeah. It's just how well can they shoot when somebody's in their face. That's what, you know, separates the quote-unquote men from the boys right there. But, yeah, and even him having such great performances in the face of that Memphis defense, mm-hmm. too, you know. That says a lot for kind of refusing to go down, taking the team, putting them on your shoulders, and dragging them into the finals.
Right. Well, how about the biggest surprise in this series? What really surprised you guys the most?
For me, it was the disappointment of Zach Randolph.
Okay.
He's a guy that a lot of people thought would be a lot of trouble for the Spurs in this series. He's young, he's athletic, he's big man, and they really just absolutely shut him down, and he wasn't able to do with it, and he really wasn't able to help his team out when he did get double covered, when he was getting trapped. He wasn't really able to help his team out, and that was kind of a big surprise to me, because you've kind of seen him dominate throughout the playoffs so far.
Right.
I have to go back to the overtime games. If you had told me going in there's going to be two OT games and San Antonio's going to win them both, I would have said, nah. That's not gonna. That was the surprise. Yeah. That and then Memphis, you know, couldn't shoot. I know their defensive team, but they just were not there. You mm-hmm. know, it'd be like seeing the Mavs go into the playoffs and then all their percentages drop and they can't make a shot. Yeah. And I've seen it too many times. But yeah, that one and overall, I called the Grizzlies overall San Antonio making it, but. No, not really. San Antonio making it to the finals is never a surprise.
That's true. This is their fifth time now in 15 years.
Yeah.
I think for me, the biggest surprise was that Memphis allowed it to go into OT those two games. Because both of those,
good point.
They had the game-winning shot. They had possession of the ball before at the end of regulation. And Mike Conley missed a pretty much wide-open layup on one of them. And I think that was the biggest surprise for me. Now, the most disappointing performance in this series, I think I have to agree with you, is Zach Randolph, Z-Bo, as he's affectionately called. The Spurs just shut him down. They got mentally into his head where they could come up and just push him real hard to be physical with him, and that's what you really need to do with a player like Z-Bo, who's all about getting inside and bumping his way around and being physical and getting to the post. And San Antonio didn't let him. I think the reason they succeeded so much this time compared to 2011 is because they had Boris Diaw and Tiago Splitter coming in with fresh legs and Tim Duncan playing like he's 25 instead of 37, who just had such great defensive presence. I know he had more blocks against Z-Bo this year than he's had in quite a long time. So I think, I don't know if it's necessarily Z-Bo not giving enough effort because he looked like he was playing with determination.
He was sweating and everything.
Yeah. So I don't know if it was Z-Bo's effort or if it was the Spurs defensive thing that, I don't know. So, but I think Z-Bo is my biggest disappointment.
Absolutely.
But as a Spurs fan, I'm like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'm so disappointed in you, Z-Bo. anyway.
Let me buy you a cake.
Well, let's move on to the next series. Miami and Indiana are tied at 2-2.
Woohoo!
And we've seen ridiculous changes in the series. Like game three, Miami came out and won 114-96, and in the first half scored 70 something points, and that's a franchise record. Now they went from that to game four losing 99-92 and LeBron James fouling out, which is just the second time in his career that he's fouled out in a postseason game.
Well, the reffing and that. I watched most of the game, but the fourth quarter especially, the reffing was just atrocious.
Right.
I was sitting there, and at first I'm like, they are not going to even give Indiana a chance. Not even going to give them a chance. And then LeBron fouls out on a questionable call.
Yeah, an illegal screen.
I will give that, you know, a little bit of a hip throw out there, but come on. But just there at the end, the reffing was horrid. Atrocious.
And we see this with Joey Crawford a lot. I mean, he's been in.
He's more interested in dancing on his tiptoes on the floor than he is.
Yeah, for Indiana in this series, I think for them to win, they've got to play like this. I mean, you saw them in this game. They relentlessly attacked the basket.
Yes.
They continuously won the battle for rebounds and loose balls. And that's what they have to do to win. They have to out-grit Miami.
Yeah.
And you saw them do this in game four. You saw them do it in game two. And you even saw a little bit of it in game one where they should have won game one, you know, outside of the horrible, horrible, horrible defense by Indiana where they let LeBron James score a layup with 2 seconds on the clock. But and that's a game they should have won. They could be up 3-1 right now, but this is, they know now. This is how they have to play, and I'm curious to see how it ends. I say Indiana in 7.
Okay.
Well, this is I say Indiana in 6.
The formula's there.
To heck with the Heat. Now, I think the first game, Indiana comes out and wins, and then you have an incredible performance by the Heat. You're kind of seeing those traditions, like the Heat walks out all full of themselves, and then they lose a game, and then they go, oh, we have to play basketball for real now, and then they go out and annihilate the competition.
Yeah.
And I think that's a sign of kind of the mentality of the team. You know, it's they're not winners, they're whiners, and things start going a little bit wrong. You get some bad reffing, and I saw it affect the Pacers last night too, but it also affects Miami to where they're like, oh yeah, we're definitely going to win, and I think it's not a matter of talent, it's a matter of something that's going on in their head. If they actually pull it together and become competitors, have a little respect for your opposition because, hey, you're in the NBA playoffs, you're in the your Eastern Conference Finals, you know, right. You're on your way to a championship if you can pull it together. I think that's the biggest the roadblock because Indiana, if you're not on your A game, the Pacers are going to beat them. And I think they'll take them in six because I think after last night, after they didn't come back and win that game and go up, then they're like, I think their fragile little prima donna egos are going to shatter a little bit. And I think Indiana's taking it.
And that's the thing with Indiana is they don't have to have a great offensive night to win a basketball game.
Right.
They can grit out the wins. And that's where it's going to get to the Heat in this long series.
Yeah, frustrate them. Just make like a hockey game. Just keep checking them into the boards.
Just keep checking them. Keep getting in their grill and pushing them, and they're going to get frustrated.
Yeah,
right.
And you've already seen it.
Well, if you want any more information on this, because we don't have much time to talk about it, but if you want more information on how the Pacers have managed to win two games, I'd really recommend checking out Grantland. They just put out a piece today. Great work from Zach Lowe, who talked about how Indiana's rebounded 39.9% of all offensive rebounds, collected those, which is just mind-blowing. That never happens. That'd be a huge NBA record, like 20, I mean, not 20, I'm exaggerating, but several points above the percentage of the NBA nice. Record. So,
no, what was that again? Give out the
Grant. Go on Grantland, Grantland.com. It's run by Bill Simons. is the main editor.
That's good because ESPN apparently doesn't write news articles for the website anymore.
Yeah.
You have to watch video and look at people's tweets to get any news. So,
yeah.
I appreciate the reference.
Check out Grantland.com. They have great basketball pieces. I mean, the guy Bill Simons wrote a book on basketball that's like 1,200 pages long. So if you want to get basketball information, check it out. They're also really funny, a lot of media references. But enough about selling Grantland to you guys. Let's move on. So you guys both predicted Indiana to win this series, and I think I'm going to have to agree with you.
I predicted the Heat to win. Oh,
you did
for Indiana to beat
now,
the Heat.
Yeah.
Yes.
You predicted Indiana win the series now.
Yes.
Now, if Indiana does win, here's a question that we hadn't really talked about. If Indiana does win and it's Indiana versus San Antonio in the finals, is that good or bad for the NBA?
I think ratings, as far as ratings goes, it's probably bad for the NBA.
Yeah.
Anytime the Heat are playing anywhere, they're must-watch TV. As right. much as everybody loves to hate them, they love to watch them too.
Yeah, and the Spurs have been just this
Spurs are just
gentle giant that nobody paid much attention to.
They really
to.
Are. They always have. They're just boring right. to watch.
Yeah.
They play great basketball. They play fundamental basketball, but they are not exciting at all. They don't have the high flyers or guys smashing it to the hoop and,
right.
and slamming it on people, the Blake Griffins mm-hmm. of the world. And Indiana really doesn't either. And so that would be a boring defensive battle that I don't even know. I don't know how much of that I would watch. But
right.
if the Heat make it and it's Heat versus Spurs, I would probably take the Heat.
Okay. So you say TV ratings, it would be bad. What about just, you know, like we saw
it's
David
Stern.
It's
better for the game of basketball.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think so.
But you talked about ratings. David Stern earlier this season fined Coach Popovich quite a lot of money just because he sent Tim Duncan and Ginobili and Parker and Danny Green, who's just a side note,
yeah, right.
sent
yeah,
them home.
I remember that.
And someone was actually suing the Spurs because he went to the Miami Heat game and said, hey, I came to watch these guys play and they weren't there. I paid lots of money. Now, they threw that case out.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think about the precedent that set that David Stern can fine someone just for sending their players home because they didn't think it was that big of a game? It was a back-to-back. It didn't affect what the Spurs were going to do. And so Popovich made the basketball smart choice and sent his players home because they were almost injured, you know, all this stuff. So how about for David Stern? Do you think it's
Cooper's
good?
Implying his opinion on the matter out there in the Senate.
Yeah, I think maybe Pop should have given the league a little bit more notice, and that okay. also gives notice to the fans to sell their tickets or do whatever they want to do mm-hmm. with their stuff. Kind of that last minute thing probably wasn't a great idea by Pop, but I don't think Stern should have any vote or say whatsoever on who the coaches want to mm-hmm. play, you know, any given
yeah.
night.
So. Absolutely, I think you're talking about, you know, it would have been nice if
right.
he had done that, and particularly for the fans.
You do that for your fans. You don't do it for David Stern.
It would have been nice, but you know, maybe it was a last minute decision too. I think at the end of the day, the best thing you can do for your fans is do the best thing for your team. Mm-hmm. And they were playing in Miami, not San Antonio.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on. Too much about that. Last question about Miami and Indiana, and then we'll move on to the NBA Finals. Who is the most valuable and least valuable player of the series so far? And it can be the same person if you want it to be.
I would say most valuable player has to be Roy Hibbert right now.
Okay.
You saw in game one all the controversy about how he didn't get to play at the end of the game, and the numbers of LeBron James scoring layups when he's in the game and not in the game, just how huge of a difference it is.
Yeah.
And you've seen him in the last few games just really dominate. I saw a stat on him earlier. He's one of the only other player in this Heat era to post 10 rebounds and
20 points
a game was Dirk Nowitzki against him. And so that's really an incredible thing to do. And so he's been a huge, huge surprise for me, that just coming out and really bullying the Heat a little bit. And as far as least valuable player goes, I think I'd have to give that to Chris Bosh.
Okay.
I think you really see kind of vice versa, that you really see Roy Hibbert just kind of taking Bosh out of the game.
Yeah. What about you, Kevin?
I'm not sure about the MVP, but I've got two LVPs, least valuable players.
Okay.
One, Dwayne Wade, because he's a prima donna and he's always got some kind of mad or whatever. I think he brings his team down. Mm. And I think it is Wade's team. And I think they would probably be, even though they seem to be doing pretty fine, they'd probably be better off if it was LeBron's team.
Right.
I think just as a matter of mental fortitude and overall character. If you can tell by now that I'm not a Dwayne Wade fan, but overall character, it'd be better if that team, you know, LeBron would be better too, and I think the team would be overall better. And tied for least valuable player, the refs. So I think they have been the least valuable thing about that series.
On the court.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to have to go most valuable player. I think Roy Hibbert's right up there. But I think Paul George is it for me.
We've
seen him come in and defensively do well against LeBron James, which is pretty astounding.
Outside of that game one mishap.
Yeah, outside of that.
To lose that game.
But that was mostly on Roy Hibbert, not really him.
Right.
And least valuable player, I have to agree, Dwayne Wade has just been a prima donna. And he's been a prima donna the whole season. He hasn't scored like he should be able to. He hasn't rebounded or assisted anything. He's just been an average NBA player playing for maximum contract money, which is just terrible. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens with the rest of the series, and it's going to be interesting to watch. The next game is tomorrow night, I think at 7:30 Central Time, and then the next game will be on Saturday, and if they need it, the next game will be on Monday. All right, so let's talk finals. Now, they're starting on June 6th. So, Kevin, we've already heard your opinion.
It's too long.
Series taking too long.
It's too long. If the sport is so intense that playing games on back-to-back days is just this horrible thing that you couldn't possibly do, then don't play a series.
Okay.
Otherwise, play a series and get it over with. Play doubleheaders. I don't know. I mean, baseball doesn't even do that, of course. But, you know, play on days, back-to-back. I mean, it's a seven-game series. You can be done in a week and a half. Okay, you play every day except for travel days. You get it done instead of this, what, you know, Thursday, then Saturday, then three more days, then whatever.
Yeah, I agree with that. NBA finals should already, or NBA finals should be going on right now, or wrapping up right now.
Or the early rounds be 2 out of 3. I understand, and I said there's no tradition within the game itself to be a series. At this point, it's been so long that the playoffs are series. I'll compromise on my opinion here. It'll do 2 out of 3. It would make them higher ratings, and then you could skip a day, and it would still be over in a week and a half or less.
Yeah,
it's way, way too long. And this is, you know, with your Spurs, we were talking about the rust versus rest argument. The rest, I agree with you. I think the rest is better. However, if you rest too long, you're going to need to have a couple of weeks of training camp to get back into game shape.
That's true. Well, let's move on just to sum up this show today. Who wins this, Spurs or the winner of the Heat and Pacers?
Well, it really depends who the winner of the Heat and Pacers are. Okay. If the Heat win, against the Pacers, I think the Heat win it all. If the Pacers win against the Heat, I think the Spurs win it all.
Okay. What about you, Kevin?
I think just not the Heat, please.
I think that's probably best for ratings.
Forces of the basketball universe, yeah. Not the Heat. You know, I'm a Mavs fan, so I'm supposed to hate the Spurs, and I don't. I like them. I have a lot of respect for the Spurs, and I like the Pacers, too. So if they get into the series, I think I'm kind of either way that goes, you know, would want to be. But definitely not the Heat. But I think I'll just go and I'll go ahead and make the call. I'll just say Spurs across the board. We'll go Spurs.
All right.
I think this is going to be a Tim Duncan – what would you call it?
Retirement party?
Final, yeah, Tim Duncan retirement party. Okay.
And we saw that with David Robinson when he retired. And I think it was the 05 series when they went to 7 games against Detroit. Who the Pistons then were amazing.
Right, right.
So I think you're right. It'll be a retirement series for Duncan no matter what happens.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be, if it's the Pacers, I think Spurs take it in 5. I don't think it's even much of a challenge.
Okay.
But if it's the Heat, I think Spurs would have to go to 7, and it's going to be a winner-take-all in Game 7. I don't know who it would be yet. I'll have to see more from the Miami Heat. But I think either way, the Spurs have a chance. I don't think the Pacers have that much of a chance, but I think the Heat have a very good chance, too. All right, that's going to do it for us today here on The Locker Room. We'll be back Friday when Taylor Phelps should, I say should with a lot of quotation marks and asterisks and yada yada.
Eyes rolling.
Yeah. No, he should be back in town and should be back on the show, but we plan on having at least Kevin on the show too if he can make it.
Well, I won't be here Friday.
Well, then we won't have him.
Sorry.
Okay. But we will. I'm planning on getting Josh Jorgensen, the Assistant Athletic Director for External Affairs, Creative Commerce, back on the show to talk a little bit about what's going on at the stadium. They're doing a lot of renovations.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Then we're going to talk just, you know, what's going to happen with the football team.
Hey, I want to, maybe you know this already, but if you get a chance, ask him what they're doing with the old turf.
Right. I will definitely ask him.
All right, good.
All right, we'll be back on Friday. This is KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch,
Ryan Billups,
and Kevin Jeffries.
See you on Friday. Mm.